Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Behind the Binge podcast. I'm so excited because today we have a guest. It's been a while since we've had a guest. And so I thought it would feel, most comfortable to bring on not only one of my colleagues, but a great friend of mine, Sam Abbott. Sam is a registered dietitian nutritionist who helps those with PCOS, ditch diets, improve insulin resistance, and balance hormones without feeling guilty or stressed about food. So we are going to be talking all about PCOS, how it intersects with binge eating and binge eating recovery, and giving you some practical tips for approaching PCOS management from a weight-inclusive lens. She's very passionate about empowering people with PCOS to find peace and balance with nutrition, hormones, body, and life. You can find Sam on Instagram at pcos.nutritionist, where she gives free tips and support around PCOS nutrition education. She's the owner of PCOS Nutrition Company, where nutrition coaching services are centered around improving hormone balance without a side of diet culture or weight stigma. I think you're going to get so much value out of this conversation, whether you have PCOS or not, because we're highlighting a lot of important topics around medical care and how it relates to weight stigma, how that impacts medical care, how you can approach a health condition from a weight-inclusive lens by pursuing health-promoting behaviors without it always being about weight loss on the other side. And overall, I just hope that you walk away from today's episode learning something new and feeling empowered. All right. Today we have my colleague and friend, Sam, joining us to talk about PCOS. So thanks for being on the podcast today, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Marissa. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. Sam and I talk all the time. We're in like a group chat with another colleague and we're
business
texting.
Besties.
Yes. And so I wanted to be able to share you with my audience because you have so much wisdom to share. And I know that a big percentage of my audience also likely struggles with PCOS because of the big overlap between binge eating and PCOS. So we're going to dive into all of that. But just to kind of get us started and have my audience get to know you, why don't you introduce yourself and let us know a bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, my name is Sam Abbott. I'm a registered dietitian and I own the nutrition private practice called PCOS Nutrition Company, where I help folks with PCOS manage symptoms without dieting or restricting food. I think I'm pretty unique in the sense that I do have a weight-inclusive practice, meaning that I really try to make all of my programs and services comfortable for people at all body sizes, and I don't focus on weight or weight loss. I got started in the PCOS space after I just saw client after client after client who had PCOS and they were struggling with developing prediabetes or type 2 diabetes or had a missing period and they were just told that they needed to lose weight. And I was like, this is not really adding up. you're not getting any tools or you're not being given any specific or realistic advice for managing your hormones. So I just wanted to learn as much about PCOS as possible. And this was back in 2017 or 18 maybe. And so I just started learning as much as I could. I got involved in PCOS advocacy and now that is what I specialize in. I have the Nourish with PCOS podcast, which you have been a guest on.
Yes, I have it's a great my podcast.
Thank you. I have my Balanced Blood Sugar for PCOS course, which is all about lowering blood sugar, and my Instagram account where I give lots of free tips and advice.
Yay! Well, I think that all the work that you do for PCOS advocacy is obviously so very important. And I think your story is so interesting how you saw this gap in the types of treatments that were available, or at least that are so normal in the PCOS space, and you sought to fill that. And weight-inclusive PCOS care is so, so, so important. And so I'm just really – I just love all the work that you do. And so I am curious, and I know my audience who maybe aren't familiar with PCOS or that are newly diagnosed with PCOS, could you tell us a bit about just the basics of what PCOS is and what it is that it impacts?
Yeah, definitely. So PCOS stands for polycystic ovary syndrome. The name is very controversial and honestly will probably get changed in the next 5 to 10 years because people think that it's only a reproductive disorder or you have to have cysts in order to have PCOS. But really, it is a metabolic and endocrine disorder that affects the reproductive system. And when I say the word endocrine, that's like a fancy word for hormones. It affects up to 20% of women and folks born with a uterus, and some of the symptoms are a lack of period or irregular periods, symptoms like cystic acne or hirsutism, which is excessive hair growth, hair thinning and hair loss, especially along that front hairline, can be a symptom of PCOS. PCOS is the leading cause of anovulatory infertility, but it's also so much more than that. Knowing that PCOS is a metabolic condition, we do see an increased risk of elevated blood sugar and type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea, fatty liver disease, endometrial cancer, and it's associated with anxiety and depression. I think now with the internet, there's so much more awareness around PCOS that I see a lot of people initiating conversations with their doctors or being like, something's not quite right with my body. But what used to be the case is that somebody would have an irregular period and they would be put on birth control. And so a lot of people didn't discover that they had PCOS until they went off of birth control and they were trying to get pregnant and had difficulty. Because a lot of people think with birth control that that is giving you a true period. And that's not quite the case. It is giving you the benefits of having a monthly bleed, or it's kind of, if you have PCOS, you really want something that's going to keep your hormones regulated in some way because that'll decrease your risk of endometrial cancer. So if you're not on birth control and you're not having a period with PCOS, that is something definitely to look into. But I would say the period piece is where a lot of people kind of have like a red flag goes up that they need to look into why that's the case. I would say though, PCOS is a diagnosis of exclusion. So a lot of the symptoms of PCOS, especially the missing period, can be related to other things too, like a thyroid disorder or hypothalamic amenorrhea or a tumor in your pituitary gland. Like there are other things going on. So having a complete medical evaluation to rule out other things first is really important.
Yeah, there's so much that goes into the PCOS diagnosis from my understanding. And I can see the ways in which, like you said, it's an exclusionary yeah. Diagnosis. And that can be so confusing and, you know, a long journey for some people. So why is I don't know if it's necessarily the first line of treatment, but why is it the common early line of treatment for people to be told to just lose weight?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So at the core of PCOS for most folks is insulin resistance. High circulating insulin levels can cause the ovaries to produce extra testosterone, which is an androgen, and these elevated androgens are at the core of PCOS symptoms. So when you have high androgens, this can stop your ovulatory cycle. This can cause hirsutism and acne and hair loss. And PCOS is also an inflammatory condition. We see that folks with PCOS have higher inflammatory markers compared to people who don't have PCOS. And I think in the medical field, there is just this thought that adiposity or fat on the body makes insulin resistance and inflammation worse. So if we can lower that, then PCOS should improve. And then, you know, in research, when there are behavioral or nutrition interventions and somebody loses weight and then there is an improvement in health outcomes, there's usually a cause and effect relationship established rather than, you know, correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation. But I think there are some important things for listeners to know. The first is that we know, and it's included in the formal evidence-based guidelines for PCOS, that insulin resistance and inflammation can occur with PCOS independent of weight. So I think this idea that losing weight will cure all of your PCOS symptoms is really misguided. And also, all of the statistics that we know about dieting and intentional weight loss still apply to medical conditions. They still apply to PCOS. So, you know, most weight loss efforts over time tend to be unsuccessful. We know that weight cycling makes insulin resistance and inflammation worse. So these are common conversations that I have with my clients. I also think in general, medical care is very weight-centric. There's a huge overlap in the medical field with pharmaceuticals. And when that's the case, sometimes there's like business incentives. We could get all into that. But I mean, who's funding a study to look at weight-neutral lifestyle and nutrition?
Like nobody profits off of weight neutral care. So these big companies that are funding these big studies are less likely to be backing or at least pursuing those types of studies.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So it is really interesting that you mention how PCOS is not an exclusive condition to those in larger body sizes. Like it's not just about the increase in weight by any means. And I have a friend who's in a straight size body who was just diagnosed with PCOS. And I think to myself, like, what is her treatment plan? And why isn't that the first line of treatment for everybody in diverse body sizes? And so when we think about that sort of approach with weight to the side, the first part of this question is, what is the goal in PCOS management? Like, is it necessarily to balance blood sugar, help with certain hormonal markers? And what's the approach to managing that? Like, what are those action steps that people are taking if they're not pursuing weight loss?
Yeah, I think that is such a great question because so many people are focusing on losing weight as like the factor of what they're trying to improve, when even in formal PCOS research and medical spaces now, even there, I'm hearing so many physicians say, like, we're not actually seeing this help people be successful at managing PCOS. So maybe we should step away from looking at that as the barometer to how PCOS is managed. So I think in terms of what you should be managing, it's actually pretty individualized based off of you and your symptoms and how you want to be managing PCOS. We see with symptoms, irregular cycles, those physical symptoms of elevated androgens, and then the metabolic effects. So elevated blood sugar and things like elevated cholesterol, triglycerides, fatty liver, and things like that. So I think anything to optimize metabolic health and manage blood sugar, as well as being mindful of reproductive health as well. You know, like I was saying, if you have an irregular cycle or you're not getting a period and you're not taking any form of birth control or medication there, that's definitely something that you want to look into managing as well. If you're on birth control and you're not getting a regular bleed, then that's different than if you're not getting a cycle and you're not taking any medication. But you want to be mindful of not letting that endometrial lining build up, which can increase your risk of endometrial cancer, which is sometimes what we see, or what I see a lot with my clients, is people start avoiding medical care. So then they can't get refills on their prescriptions after a certain amount of time, and they're kind of just going without a cycle and
avoiding medical care because of weight stigma in the medical setting.
Yeah, and just there's not a lot. So much of PCOS management is actually related to nutrition and lifestyle, which a lot of physicians understandably don't get a lot of training on. And so I think people are going to their physicians saying, like, what else can I do to manage my PCOS? And they're like, well, just take metformin and birth control, or you need to lose weight, or you're, you know, how those those doctor's appointments go, yeah. where they can end up where somebody is feeling hopeless or a lot of shame, or they do experience weight stigma or things like that, which can be really discouraging. So a lot of the clients that I work with either don't have a regular healthcare provider or they have a lot of health anxiety, which, you know, I think is much more harmful to health than PCOS itself.
Yeah, totally. And I've seen statistics that say you have a 60% increased risk of mortality alone if you're experiencing weight stigma in the medical setting, regardless of your BMI. And I think if we were to think of why that is, a large part of that would be related to avoiding the medical setting as a result of that stigma and, you know, things not getting caught earlier, treatment not, I don't know, being well managed because of that. And that's not a fault to the patient, but rather a whole system, which was a whole other conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think I just worked on an abstract about this topic that was presented at the International Conference for Androgen Excess and PCOS, and it was all about weight stigma. And I think people think weight stigma is about people getting their feelings hurt or body image in like an appearance-based perspective. And it's really about discrimination and access to healthcare. And, you know, if a physician is making an assumption about a patient because of body size, they're not going to provide the same care. And I see firsthand over and over and over again with my clients that when somebody is in a smaller body, they come to me with a very comprehensive set of labs and testing and imaging. When somebody is in a larger body, it is more likely that they have been told those labs probably wouldn't be helpful. You should just lose weight. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, that's an anecdotal experience with me. But like you said, with research, we do see that independent of weight itself, weight stigma negatively impacts health, it negatively impacts insulin resistance, mental health, body image, inflammation, like the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I actually, again, it's anecdotal, but I've had a client in the past before who had insulin resistance, PCOS, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and their doctor sent them to a weight loss clinic to try to manage all of those things. We started working together because she was also struggling with binge eating, and we'll segue into that and how common that is with PCOS. But she was finding that her medication management for her blood sugar, it just didn't seem to be helping. So I told her, go back to your doctor, talk about, you know, your medication. Do you need to change dosages? I don't know much about the medication mm-hmm. side of things. So just talk to your doctor. And her doctor said, I'm not going to talk about changing your medication until I see you lose weight, because I think that will help a lot of things. And it was so frustrating for this client, obviously, because she was like, I've been at this weight loss clinic for like 6 months. I'm not seeing myself, you know, having any improvement, doing the things that they're telling me to do and being on the weight loss medications that they're telling me to do. And it's honestly making me sick, yet I don't have an option because my doctor, which is terribly unethical, is basically withholding any sort of medication adjustments until she loses weight. And the truth is, if weight loss worked, it would work. And right. even if it worked, it's sort of like, would that really address, you know, the underlying issues that are going on at hand? And so, you know, I've said it in other podcasts before, but it's lazy medicine to just be like, well, let's wait until you lose weight. Because even if it worked, if that's not happening for your patient, then other things need to be talked about and addressed.
Yeah, it goes back to access to care. And I agree, it's unethical. And it's a conversation I have every single day with my clients. And it's part of the reason why I'm involved in PCOS advocacy, because I think it just having a recommendation for managing a medical condition by telling someone to lose weight it's not very productive in practice. And we see that in research.
Yeah, 100%. So you mentioned briefly that a lot of the actual management of PCOS comes from those lifestyle changes and nutrition mm-hmm. changes, right? However, mm-hmm. there's also a really high prevalence of binge eating behaviors and binge eating disorder mm-hmm. within the PCOS space. I've seen yeah. some sources say 1/3 to 1/2 of those with PCOS experience binge eating behaviors, and that those with PCOS are 3 to 4 times more likely to be diagnosed with binge eating disorder in comparison to those without PCOS. And so when mm-hmm. I think about, obviously from my lens, binge eating recovery, right? It's about loosening up the reins on restrictions and diversifying what someone might be eating in order to break rules so that those restrictions aren't imposing that restrict binge cycle, right? But when somebody is also simultaneously trying to manage their PCOS, insulin resistance, blood sugar, that can be so incredibly tricky. Mm-hmm. So first, I'd love to hear your take on why there's such a high prevalence of binge eating with PCOS, but then also the, you know, the complicated sort of treatment of both of those things simultaneously.
Yeah, I think that I wish that there was better research around the specifics of why binge eating is so much higher, because in clinical conversations with people who don't regularly work with eating disorders, I hear like kind of like an assumption that it's PCOS itself or insulin resistance itself that is creating this higher risk of binge eating. However, if you are a professional that has any training at all in binge eating disorder, the writing is kind of on the wall. Mm-hmm. You have a medical condition where people are pretty much told from the time they're diagnosed that they need to lose weight, stop eating carbs, no sweets, maybe you should fast. And then on top of that, you have a medical condition that causes cravings, always feeling hungry, fatigue, sleep issues. It's just a perfect storm.
That came to my brain. I was like, that is the perfect storm for binge eating.
Right. It's like you're feeling like crap. You're restricting food because you think that's what you're supposed to be doing. You don't have the space to develop healthy coping mechanisms. And your body just compensates for it. And I just feel like that eating disorder education should really be part of medical training.
100%. And I think it's a really great point that you make that while those with PCOS may find themselves having increased cravings, we can't just place it all on that and say, okay, well, let's maybe balance your blood sugar to manage those cravings without making sure that we're checking the roots to see if there's underlying mental restriction, physical restriction, shame, emotional eating, those types of things as well. Because just trying to manage those cravings, I mean, could also be fueling the fire simultaneously.
100%. And, you know, we know that in addition to restricting foods, needing some sort of emotional coping strategy can also be a part of binge eating. And what I see a lot with the clients that I work with, especially younger clients who rely on their parents either financially or in some sort of capacity, having a family member who is still, or a parent who's still stuck in diet culture, who holds a lot of anti-fat bias, having that person that you look up to and who is part of your support team telling you all the time that you need to lose weight and they're concerned about your health, like that definitely really takes an emotional toll on someone too. And I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, that restrictive mindset, whether it's, oh, I shouldn't be eating this or that, or I should be losing weight, is such a big trigger for binge eating. And so, you know, let's say you have someone and they are struggling with binge eating and we're recognizing how restriction is playing a role in that, but also they have to be mindful of their blood sugar and their hormonal health and managing their PCOS. What's sort of the first thing you would address? Would it be, okay, well, let's sort of try to get this binge eating at bay. Let's break free from what's fueling the binge eating in the first place and then kind of transition into some gentle nutrition? Or would it be sort of like I know it's kind of nuanced, but would it be sort of like a joint approach where we're tackling the root of the binge eating, which is the restriction, while also maybe adding in some behaviors, not restricting, but adding behaviors that would help to balance their blood sugar and manage those cravings?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a joint approach. I think with gentle nutrition, there's a really big spectrum. There's one end of things where the nutrition recommendations that we're giving for adding are just super, super general. And then there's another end where people feel like they need more structure to feel empowered and to feel like they're taking care of themselves. So if you're somebody who you're looking for that structure because you're scared of gaining weight or you're afraid of eating, that's when we know we need to stick more to the other spectrum of things. I would say it's a joint approach, but also just eating regularly is like step one of gentle nutrition for PCOS. Even if you're not paying attention to how you're building your meals or anything, it's just eating something like regular meals and then snacks in between when you need them. That's like step one. And that can also be step one with binge eating too. So I think when we talk about gentle nutrition for insulin resistance, we have to like go back to the basics, because so many folks with PCOS who binge eat are completely skipping meals or they're completely skipping snacks, either because they're intentionally doing it or they think they're not allowed to eat, or sometimes it's just not part of their self-care routine.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I hear also a lot online and from previous clients this idea that fasting, intermittent fasting, skipping breakfast is somehow going to help you manage your blood sugar. And when I just think of my like really bare bones basic understanding of blood sugar management just from our own dietetic training, I just think about how we're taught, no, like consistent intake is actually more beneficial. So you're not going from, you know, starving to then eating a lot. And then that is more likely to spike your blood sugar. And yeah, I think there's just like a lot of misinformation out there about what it even means to balance blood sugar.
Yeah. And, you know, there is a body of research out there about fasting and blood sugar management. I think it's really important to note that a lot of that research is done on men. How ironic that.
Interesting.
You know, because with research on women or people with a uterus and ovaries, there's like this hormonal aspect that people have to take into account. But we should be taking that into account, because with PCOS, we're talking literally about a hormonal condition. And something else interesting, they were just talking about this on the Maintenance Phase podcast, which, by the way, they just came out with an episode about Ozempic that is fantastic.
Oh my God, I can't wait to listen. I haven't heard it
yet. Yeah. But they were bringing up such an important point that, Marissa, I know you and I have talked about before. And it's that in research, when we're talking about applying research, it's the way that I feel like the medical community talks about it is so individualistic, in the sense of like, well, here's what it said in this study. So like, this is how it should be for you. And like, if you're fasting and it's leading to binge eating, that means that fasting is not an effective tool for you.
Yeah. I always talk with my clients about that, because they'll say like, oh, I saw this, you know, study about, I don't know, X, Y, or Z thing, eating this way, you know, causes inflammation or doesn't, is good for you, whatever. And I always say, regardless of what the research says or if it's even credible, if you trying to follow that line of recommendations causes you harm, then it doesn't apply to you. Because research and nutrition studies, it is so difficult to conduct it to where it would be controlled for all sorts of different confounding factors. And I mean, it is really unfortunate. It's hard to get high quality nutrition studies because of that reason. But also because of that reason, we have to always center ourselves as the expert of our own bodies. That research article doesn't know you better than you know yourself. And so even in seeing literature out there that can, you know, help guide you in certain directions of managing your health in any way, you always have to trust that. If it's not working for you, then it's just not working for you, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think also it's not like a moral failure or that something it's something that you're doing wrong. I mean, the results of like a clinical trial or what happens within that short time frame of a study doesn't mean that that's what's going to happen out in the real world. Like when you're living your full life and you're not confined to like the parameters of the study. And I also think people who are participating in a study, they know that they're participating in a study, so they want to see it through, or they're kind of mindful of that. And that's actually what the maintenance phase podcast episode was talking about, how the studies related to Ozempic and some of these GLP-1s that when they actually follow people over like a 2 to 5 year period, they found completely different results compared to that initial study. And it's because so many things affect our food intake and our lifestyle and mental health and everything that goes into health and wellness. And we don't live life like we're not a petri dish, you know,
we're not human beings. In a bubble. Yeah.
Right.
It's very much human nature to try to find that one thing that's going to be the cure-all, which is why, you know, I have so much empathy and understanding for those that jump onto the Ozempic or the weight loss medication train, because it is presented as this cure-all, but, you know, the lived experiences of those that I know who have taken it, that you know who have taken it, it just can be very different than what we're seeing plastered online or in those really short periods of time, the successes that we might be seeing.
Yeah, that's why it's so important that not only when you're working with your dietitian, but also your healthcare team, that like we are centering your lived experience above everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Goes back to that making yourself like the driver again. Like you are in the driver's seat of the car. We might be helping guide you, or we might be helping you figure out the right path to take that's best for you, but you're ultimately the one in control here. So kind of like to summarize all that we just said, sounds like your approach to helping support those who have PCOS to manage their symptoms or possibly manage their hormonal health is really just a behavioral approach versus, you know, doing everything for the sake of losing weight. It's sort of like tweaking behaviors and then seeing the ways in which it might support someone or impact their PCOS management.
Yeah. When I'm working with clients, I like to do a big survey of all of their symptoms and also how they feel like their symptoms are impacting them and their quality of life. And then also do a survey of like, what is your diet history like and what is your relationship with food like? You know, if somebody has a history of an eating disorder and they feel like working on things like food pairings is going to be harmful to them, like maybe that's where we rely more on medication. And that's totally okay. There's not a right or wrong way to look at how you're going to treat these labs and symptoms. But yeah, I think that quality of life is so important. And I would really encourage people to, you know, make a list of all of your labs and symptoms and how you're feeling and kind of evaluate that versus the number on the scale.
Yeah, I really like that. And I really like also centering that quality of life piece, because again, if we were to play with the idea that weight loss could be the answer, even if it was, assessing how that and the pursuit of that is impacting your quality of life is just as important of any sort of outcome it may provide.
100%. And you know, when I'm working with a client, I can't guarantee that somebody's blood sugar is going to be within normal range. I can't guarantee that somebody who's trying to get pregnant is definitely going to get pregnant, but I can help you support yourself in that process. You know, I can help you continue to center yourself, you know, with your overall well-being instead of getting sucked into the weight conversation above all else.
Yeah. So it becomes more sustainable and not this sort of like all or nothing sort of approach, or even just the type of approach to where if something's not working, it's sort of like, oh, well, we're starting over, but rather exploring and adjusting things along the way.
Yeah, totally. And exploring things without judgment or expectation.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Well, we've covered so much. I'm pretty sure we covered mostly everything I wanted to chat about. So if you could just leave the listeners with one thing that you want them to know if they have PCOS and they're working on managing their PCOS, what would you leave them with?
Well, I think something really important to know is that you can improve labs and symptoms of PCOS independent of weight. So if you're having trouble really letting go of the scale, at the very least, give yourself space to at least observe what is happening with other symptoms and other labs as you are working on letting go of dieting and healing binge eating.
Yeah, I love that. And just that encouragement that it may feel like that's the only answer, but the truth is there's other approaches out there that might be, you know, more in alignment of your needs and your values and what would best support you overall. So I love that. This was such a great conversation. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing with our listeners a bit about PCOS and weight-inclusive PCOS care. I know you shared a bit at the beginning about your podcast, but where can people find you on social media or get connected with you if they want to know more or work with you?
So my social media handle, Instagram is really the best place to find me if you're looking to follow me on social media. My handle is at PCOS.nutritionist. I also have a free intuitive eating workbook for PCOS. I can give you the link for that, Marissa. That's a really great starting point if you want to look at the intuitive eating principles from a non-diet lens. And then my website is PCOSNutritionCo.com.
Love it. Yeah, I'll link all of those things in the show notes so that way everyone can get in touch with you. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Marissa. This was awesome.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening into today's episode. Everything that we mentioned throughout the episode will be linked in the show notes below. I really hope you head over to Sam's page and give her a follow because she is so knowledgeable on this topic. And she's very passionate about PCOS advocacy and is doing a lot in the PCOS space so that there can be more equitable healthcare when it comes to PCOS management. Again, you can find her at PCOS.nutritionist on Instagram. And she also has a podcast called Nourished with PCOS. And everything else you can find on her website, PCOSNutritionCo.com. And as always, you can find me on Instagram at binge.nutritionist. You're listening here on Behind the Binge podcast, where I really hope you go over and give me a review. And just a reminder, if you have been thinking about getting support to heal your relationship with food and pursue a healthful life that's free from binge eating, the diet cycle, or guilt, stress, and obsession around food or your body, we are currently enrolling private coaching clients one-to-one with me or my associate RD Livy, and you can designate in your application if you would prefer one or the other, or if you're kind of open to whoever's the best fit for you. There's options so that way you feel supported and empowered on your journey to food freedom. After you apply, we get to hop on a free call so that way we both can make sure that we're the best fit for each other moving forward. You can find all of the information about private coaching on the website behindthebinge.com, and of course, I'm linking everything in the show notes. That is it for today. Thanks so much for listening in, and I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.